Hi, my name is Shinvon Viku, and this is the Cool Kids Club podcast, episode
8.
Hydrate. With me on this podcast today are Sionic Freak.
Yo!
And Vimon Josh. And John Jones.
I'm not sure Josh is there.
And Vimon Josh.
Well, he was here, and then he might have got mad after
comments. Oh, hi.
Oh, there you are.
My mic was off.
Oh, all right. Maybe Daft Punk fan may join us later, maybe not. So this week we decided to talk about the first episode of Gundam Unicorn, and we tried to get Josh to catch up, I guess, to that point in the series, but that's a lot of stuff. He did a good job watching, like, all of First Gundam and a bunch of other stuff in, like, a couple of weeks, but then he skipped ahead and went to Gundam Unicorn anyway, so, Without spoiling things about Zeta Gundam and etc., let's talk about the first episode of Gundam Unicorn. One thing that's unusual about this is that it's a adaptation, so it's a non-original series, which is unusual for this franchise. It's adapted by a series of novels by Haritoshi Fukui, and the problem with that is that you can be easily spoiled on it, and that's something that I can't find many things to complain about with this series, but that is one thing that I would hold against it, is that there are spoilers out there, even though the series is not finished being animated.
Yeah, even, like, Full Frontal's identity and everything, you know, that kind of thing just floats around out there, and it's kind of annoying.
Yeah, so that's... It's disappointing. It takes some of the surprise out of it, I think. Like, I already knew about... I already knew about who Audrey was. I already knew about who Marita was, you know, before I'd even seen the series. And I try to avoid spoilers as best I can, but it's just not... I mean, it's just... Some things you just can't avoid. And so that's a shame. But it's still a very interesting series, and it's very rewarding, especially if you've seen a whole bunch of other Gundam series before. And I can't recommend it enough. I would recommend that you watch the preceding ones prior to it, but I think it could still probably be enjoyed without it. So, the first thing that happens in this one is,
Just a reminder to our viewers, if you haven't seen it yet, you should probably watch it before you listen to this. Just turn it off if you haven't seen it, and you can download it later from the website, tuneradio.com.
And there goes 3/4 of our audience.
Oh, well.
They can download it.
It starts out with the terrorist, like, the speech thing on that, like, satellite thing.
Thank
like,
you.
To start the UC era, yeah.
I have not watched this in well over a year.
that's Zionic why I watched it today.
Zionic and I rewatched it this afternoon.
Oh. So, it starts off in UC 0001, I guess you could call it. And that's... God damn, I can't think of his name. Siam Vist. The leader of the Vist Foundation as a child was part of a terrorist bombing at the residency of the Prime Minister of the Earth Federation. And we learn later, or it's hinted later, that this was actually a conspiracy orchestrated by the Earth Federation to encourage whatever cracking down on... sort of a Titans-esque situation, but we don't know a whole lot of what happened between 0001 and 0079. That's kind of hard to make the connection when you watch the scene. It's there, and that is Siam Vist.
To encourage cracking down on who? Zeon didn't exist back then.
Any political dissidents,
huh?
Whatsoever. That's just kind of how the Earth Federation rules.
I was gonna say the only thing that really happened was like the Zaku mobile suit developments, and then of course Zeon, the Principality of Zeon took shape in 0068 or 69,
mm-hmm.
And then pretty much then you have them starting on side 3 and everything, and then of course they declare war on January 1st 0079.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we do not fully understand the connection between the first scene of episode 1. The rest of the series, other than knowing that that's Siam Vist as one of the terrorists, and now he seems to be on his deathbed, and and is talking to Cardius, who's his son, I think. I'm pretty sure it's his son. And Cardius is, of course, the father of the main character, Benazir. And if you figured that out before they got to that point in the episode, give yourself a high five, because I sure didn't. But I'm pretty slow, so
I had that I had that spoiled for me. But
that's in episode one.
Yeah. Because there's like
you had it spoiled for you before you saw it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't know that. So then we have Marita and what the hell is that guy's name? There's so many characters in this.
Panasher?
No, the guy that she calls the Master Museum.
I was gonna say Paptimus, that's not it.
He's a captain. They call him captain half the time, so
yeah. I can't think of his name.
Oh,
next
God.
Scene is
beard, right?
It's being assaulted by Londo Bell forces, and Londo Bell is still around apparently in 0096, so that's cool. And Bright is still in their Federation forces. So
I didn't know if at that point if Bright is like in charge of the entire Londo Bell fleet or still in charge of just his ship. Because they brought his name up, but it was just like, I wasn't sure what his position in the Federation is at that time.
That's a good question. I guess we'll find out. But I think he is the leader. I think he is the leader of Wonder Bell.
He's supposed to be in a later episode, right?
Say that again?
He's supposed to be in a later episode, right?
Yes, he is. So we'll win for sure.
Yeah, episode 4, I think I read.
Yeah. So there's Bright. Another...
Okay. Cardius Fist is apparently the grandson of Siam Fist.
Oh, okay. Alright. I don't know who the
intermediary Fist is, but I don't think he's
alive anymore.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, so Siam Fist is hooked up to some kind of I don't know what it is, but nobody should, obviously no one should live for like 120 years, even at this point in the future. That's
some sort of cryogenics or something, you know?
Yeah, that's just unnaturally long, even with the technology in the series.
Well, I mean, you got a few people that are about that age now, but it's just a very handful of them left that are old.
And they, like, can't move or talk or anything.
True. Kind of like this guy, but, I mean, he's still alive, so...
Right. So, yeah, obviously, there's some... Aside from him being the leader of this foundation, there's some need to keep him alive that long. And you see him in this fancy, you know, I don't know, high tech bed or whatever it is, and I guess we'll figure out more about that later. But we've not seen or heard from him since that opening scene, I believe. So this is going up to episode 3. We've not heard from him again, so hopefully we'll explain that later on. And I think the first fight scene with Marita taking on these Londo Bell forces is really, really cool, isn't it? I mean, that's a hell of a fight scene.
And her mobile suit starts with like a KY something. Yeah, something like that. But it's basically like a four-winged, like, Cubulae.
Yeah, or Queen Mantha, which is...
Queen Mantha, yeah.
Yeah, the one that Peru 2 pilots in Dulce, you know. So,
that's true.
If you've watched other ones, you're going to immediately notice some similarities. And obviously, you know, there's the Sinanju, which is like the Sazabi, that Shard pilots in First Counterattack. If you've ever looked at those great Gundam tactical manuals that Tokyopop used to put out, or ever looked on MHQ or something in the MSV section, you might also notice some MSVs from Zeta, Double Zeta, Stress Counterattack, that era come up in this show, which is really cool. And I really appreciate that they are kind of like throwing a bone to really longtime fans just through these minor like inclusions of various really obscure like mobile suits. So,
Was the novel or the film of Sharks Counterattack released first?
I'm going to say the film, because there were a couple of different novels. So,
well, Beltorchica's Children or whatever it was, the main one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that came after. Same as Tomino's novelization of the originals.
Josh has been reading that recently, I think. The novelization of the originals.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
You have anything to say about that, Josh?
The manga or something, did you say? The novels.
Yeah,
I've skimmed through them. I'm really lost. Burned to some ship called the Pegasus. I think it's supposed to be white-based, but...
We could really quickly talk about the differences in novels, and that's one of them, is that it's, instead of the Pegasus class white base, it's the white base class Pegasus in the novels. I don't know why they made that change, but there's something else. And the other thing is that Amra is already in the military.
Yeah, he's like a pilot trainee or something like that in the beginning.
Right.
Yeah, that really threw me off as well.
So there's that, and of course. I know we've talked about this before. I don't know if it was when we were recording.
The other thing that like threw me off was that like apparently the first book is like an adaptation of the second half of the show, and then the other two books are original material or something.
I suppose it's not.
Well, because like the first book has what's her name, the. New type there.
Lala?
Lala.
Yeah.
Right, and she's not in the TV series, so they're in, but there's more. I would say it's more of that they just kind of shifted the events around a little bit more and had Lala come into the story earlier and obviously skipped a whole bunch of stuff.
And I also skipped towards the end, and apparently in the books, the one-year war continues into the next year or something.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know why you're reading it like that, but yeah, you're actually going to get confused if you skip around and stuff.
Well, yeah.
I'd say it's worth reading because there's a lot of differences other than just changing minor stuff that I've mentioned so far. There's a lot of different characters and their relationships with Amra are much more in-depth, and other characters have different roles entirely. Like, Romba Rawl, they don't ever go to Earth, and Romba Rawl is no longer, you know, like the Desert Tiger. He's more like a spy on Shar by the Zavis, and it's very different and pretty cool. I like the way that it all wraps up in the end. I think I heard that these books are like insanely expensive and hard to find.
Oh yes, I can actually, that's part of my personal hunt for stuff out in the wild, is trying to find these Gundam books. Now the ones that were actually published in the early 90s, which actually has some, like, I guess, mistranslations or whatever.
Those are not
as expensive as the republished one that had all three books together in like 2004. Like, that book itself sells for over $800 on eBay right now.
Oh,
so if yes. I mean, like, that, I wish I knew that book existed back then. I wish I picked it up.
Who released it?
It was Stonebridge.
And did they release like 300 copies or something like that?
I don't know, but I have one of them.
Really?
I'm not going to sell it though.
Yeah,
you bastard.
Yeah, I think I'm reading the original translation because there's a lot of weird names.
Yeah, there's PDF files of the original translation online, but there's nothing about the complete set unless.
The weird thing about the PDF file I'm using is that it has the cover for the new version.
Oh.
Even though it has the old translation? Yeah. And the old translation has, like, the 80s, like, model kit box look, retro Mobile Suit Gundam look on the covers, as far as I know.
I love those.
And those were translated by some other guy, but I can't think of the publisher at this time. But I think they're, like, between the new book and then the other ones from the 90s, like, they're done by two different publishers.
Well, I know that Frederick L. Schott did the translation, at least for the new ones, and he's, I don't know, I guess what you would call some kind of anime scholar. He's, like, written books about Tezuka and history of anime and that kind of thing. And,
yeah, I heard that, too.
He, They mentioned in the new translation of these that in the old ones that they put Char is like Shaw, but Zaku is Zack.
Yeah,
and, you know, weird stuff like that.
Zack.
But that's because at the time, you have to remember, there was no English dub of any Universal Century material over here, and Sunrise had not determined what they wanted the official spellings to be yet.
This was before even the movies were dubbed?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, this is way before any UC stuff came over here. Like, the only thing I can think of offhand that's UC-related was, I do know Animag from, like, the late 80s, early 90s, that was published by Trish Ledoux. She did some translations of, like, the Zeta Gundam episodes into the magazines. I got one of those, actually. But, and I think I actually had her autograph that a couple of animazements ago, but, like, I asked her about that, too. She goes, well, pretty much at the time, like, we had to guess what happened in the show. So chances are, whatever she wrote back, you know, 20-some years ago is a lot different than what's on my DVDs. I haven't had a chance to read the book yet, because since I finished Zeta. I should, but I'm curious what they put back then.
Yeah, another thing kind of on that subject is, if you look at some of the Gundam model kits that were released in the 90s before the show had come out here, is that they used to put, instead of Earth Federation Space Force on the Gundams, they would put UNT Spacey, which is United Nations Terra Space Force, from Macross.
Yeah.
Because they didn't know at the time what exactly they wanted to translate that, whatever it is. Something.
Wait, wasn't the UNT lettering in the 0080? I think it is. Maybe.
Yeah.
That's why that looks so familiar.
Yeah, it is. And they had not determined that. And also you'll see Principality of Zion on some of the Zeon Mobile Suit boxes.
How anti-Semitic.
It is, because they had not thought about it that much. They were not making these really for an English market and had not thought of how they really wanted these to sound in English. So there you go. If you go back and look at some old Gundam merchandise, you'll find all kinds of weird stuff like that. But now everything's pretty standardized, and they have people at Sunrise who speak English and pay attention.
AKA Mark Simmons.
Yeah, yeah.
It used to be that way for, like, a lot of anime stuff. I mean, Goku, they used to spell it Gokou and everything.
Yeah,
you know?
They still do, actually.
Really?
I don't know why.
Who?
They still do.
Who still spells it like that?
Bandai of Japan on Dragon Ball merchandise disco.
Oh, well, not in America, though. Right?
No, not in America. But this whole time I've just been talking about Japanese merchandise and Japanese translations done in Japan. And the novels, the original translation of the novels, were done by people who just kind of guessed, and that's how you got up with Shaw and Zock and that kind of stuff.
So, yeah, we were discussing Unicorn.
Yeah.
At one point, we were,
right.
Yeah.
We didn't even discuss the first, like, 5 minutes or 10 minutes. We got 20-minute tangent about translations and stuff, but it's all good fun.
Well, excuse me.
I said it's all good, man.
So, while we're on Macross, you may have noticed the in episode 1 when Benazir and Audrey are in the colony well, inside the zero gravity part, and he reaches out and grabs her hand. That was a subtle reference to Macross that you may have caught. And let's see, I'm just kind of going through this episode, see if I can remember that. The whole the part where they arrive at Cardis's mansion is pretty cool. There's obviously some weird freaky shit that happened to him when he was a kid, some kind of weird experiments that were done on him, and I guess we'll find out more about that later, but I still don't know, you know, exactly what was made for him or what, you know, we don't know.
Like, they'll say words and he'll just start quoting sentences and, like, slap himself in the face. It's like, what am I saying? Where did this come from? And he'll just, like, freak out over it.
Yeah, so the weird things were done to Benazir in that mansion that have totally fucked with his mind, and like I said, I don't know what exactly is his connection to the unicorn. When he finds it at the end and the Cardius is dying and gives it to him, was that what he intended for all along? Like, who was supposed to be the pilot of this? And why did they have a system where it was, you know, where read your biosignature or whatever and then locked the suit out from being operated by anyone else.
Isn't Banasher supposed to be the pilot?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if that's what they always intended or not. And then if that is the case, then why has his father, you know, kept his identity secret and stayed away from him for so many years?
He was waiting for the right time.
Well...
Well, that right time came when he, like, you know, blew up or whatever.
Yeah, just, the right time came when his father was dying. Like, he just happened to be there.
He's like, she's all yours, son. Open her up. It's all good.
Yeah.
That's the worst. We're skipping way ahead there. But, pretty much, yeah, in between what we just discussed and everything, which is pretty much towards the end, is, like from what I wrote down in my notes is that to go back to the beginning is he's in pretty much in space Anaheim electronic school,
right?
Learning about UC history or whatever, and he's got those teachers and I don't want to be with that teacher much longer. I do like how they have like a Zeon museum, like they had some of their like uniforms and stuff like that. That was something I noticed.
That's pretty great. And I thought it was funny that. That there's like, I think Takuya is his name. Just there's only like one of Banaju's classmates that's even interested in the slightest about this, and everyone else is like totally jaded and
yeah,
like they don't care at all about this. Like the greatest, you know, conflict in human history that only happened about like I don't know,
you know, like
a couple years before born or so, and they're just like
it was like 16 or 17 years earlier that like yeah, pretty much changed the entire existence of it, what everything is now, and
yeah,
just like.
And they
that's cool news.
The teacher says the conflict happened 1 year before you were born, so I guess they're all like 16.
Yeah.
15, 16, yeah.
There you go. And I guess with all the Neo Zeon uprisings that have occurred since then, I suppose it's easy to see how anyone could just not care about this stuff anymore.
That's true.
I guess it's been completely peaceful since 0093.
But well yeah, I was saying, but like, you know, when they got out of class, like he basically he's looking out through the window because they have like the damaged Zaku there. Mm-hmm. And the one girl that's his classmate, which I'm sure she's head over heels with him or whatever, but
Mika.
They start talking about it. Yeah, Mika, like they start talking about like their, like he's like, you know, I know sometimes my life doesn't feel like I can really control it or whatever. And then he's looking out in space, and he sees, like, a glimpse of Unicorn, like, way off in the distance.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty cool. And then, of course, outside in space, we're supposed to be, like, testing the Unicorn out without the kids being there, but their shuttle got broke. So they had to stay there for another day. So they're like... but then, of course, what also happens next is that... Audrey,
mm-hmm.
is on board the ship where the... where basically this carrier where that had the... the one girl that piloted a big Quinn Mantha mobile suit lookalike. Marita, okay. So basically, Aubrey's is on the same ship, and so she breaks out because her goal there is trying to get over to get in touch with the organization there that's doing
the Vis Foundation, yeah.
The Vis Foundation.
Yeah, they're going to give them the unicorn gun, apparently. And
yeah.
It still is not fully explained what the relationship is between that and Laplace's box, and
or really what Laplace's box is.
Yeah, we still really don't know, but they'll explain it at some point. I mean, they have to. They've talked about it so much. It's not going to be.
It's not going to be an Evangelion situation where they just leave a lot of this stuff up to the imagination.
I assume
that's not the way they
because
work.
This
not
is
Gundam.
Yeah, this is the motivation. No, it's not the Gundam way. This is the motivation for pretty much all the characters in this show, is to find out what it is. So I assume we'll find out eventually. And it will have something to do with what happened in UC-001 when Cyan Vis bombed the Federation President's headquarters. And what was I going to say about... the character designs for this are a little different. When this project first started, some people on the internet were upset because Yoshikazu Yasuhiko was not officially listed as the character designer for the anime adaptation. They had someone else take his original illustrations for the novels, and update them for the anime. And Yoshikazu Yasuhiko is the he was the animation director and character designer for the original Gundam and Zeta Gundam, and he's also made manga series like Gundam the Origin, and very much still into Gundam, obviously. But if you look at the character designs from the novels, you'll notice that Banagher in particular looks really, really different. And in the anime, they tried to make the character's hair look more 80s-like, which I greatly, greatly appreciate. It makes the series look more old school, and like even though it's the animation's really nice and brand new, it looks like the characters just stepped out of an 80s anime, and that's awesome. Especially Mikat's hair. Yeah. That hair's epic.
The long purple hair, yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like that character's only purpose is to, like, be jealous of Audrey or something, you know?
Well, her only purpose is to have the best hair.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, she spends her time doing her hair 4 hours a day. She's got to show it off for, you know, our man, so...
Right.
But, of course, there's also a recurring theme in Gundam, too, where basically, you know, while Audrey is falling from space... But, by the way, her name that she gave the main character is Audrey Byrne, which, gee, it couldn't sound anything like Audrey Hepburn.
No.
Yeah, it's... but anyways, she sneaks out of the ship, and apparently she gets caught falling down like the space colony and everything. I guess she's gliding or something due to the currents. I'm not sure, but
yeah, that escape plan wasn't really planned out too well.
Yeah, she didn't think that through, but you know, it's all good because apparently, you know, Bernard gets his.
Let's just call him that for now.
I got two beers in me, so
I know. I'm sorry, keep going. Sorry.
We're
going
to call him Bernard, alright?
Alright, Bernard.
And anyways, he gets, like, apparently a new type sense that, like, something's wrong outside. And then he jumps, he does the good old-fashioned, hey, I need to borrow this mech for just a few minutes. Like every other Gundam series, I need this, I'll bring it right back. Not. And it goes out and rescues her. And, of course, they crash land, and then, you know, he's rescues her, and, of course, she's trying to, like, arrest him. Like, hey, you working for somebody? He's like, no, I just saved your life.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, I got nothing better to do for the next few hours. Can I just tag along and just kind of, you know, be your half bodyguard? And, and then she's like, oh, it's cool.
And then 20 minutes later, she tells him to get lost.
Yeah, that's when they get at the mansion and everything, because he's wanted to be needed. But, and of course, they go into this, they meet up with the, I am so bad with names. But they meet up with the girl who pilots the Queen Mantha. The
Marita.
Yeah, just do the names from now on. I can tell the story.
All right.
So they,
yeah, they meet up with Rita and she chases them. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, they have
some martial arts in that. That was pretty great.
Yeah,
not a whole lot of that kind of stuff in Gundam. Ever since Camille used to like regularly beat the shit out of people,
fit,
you know,
yeah,
with his judo skills.
There's a decent amount in Zeta, you know.
What'd you say?
There's a decent amount in Zeta, but you know, not since then.
Not a whole lot in other ones. So that was kind of cool. A throwback, I guess you could say.
Yeah, but he basically like wins the fight by grabbing her cape and just throwing her off, like the thing. And it's just like, wow. He's like, hey, I win. But and then I've also thought it was funny. Like they're over there having their discussion with Audrey, the other girl, and then he's over there like I thought he was like tweeting on his Haro unit, like, oh man, I got caught. He plays like the whole fake bomb thing where like blow up, and then like Haro just jumps in his hand and he's like, dude, we're off.
Yeah, that was pretty sweet. I don't know if he practiced that or whatever, but it turned out really cool.
They rehearse it like every night, like, what do we do when we get robbed?
Yeah, pretend Haro is a bomb.
Yeah,
and then we'll use the zero gravity to our advantage and like grab some article clothing and throw them off the edge.
That's true. Let's see here, what else? Oh yeah, and then there's one scene where basically, like, towards the end, this is where the final battle happens and everything. The Londo Bell unit sneaks up on the colony, because by then there's a couple of eunuchs that came out of the transport that had Audrey on and everything, and then, like, you know, there's one guy has a lookout, but he was too busy listening to his iTunes on his Zaku unit. He did not really notice that, you know, there's, like, 20 mobile suits around him, and he starts freaking out. I guess he owns his own kind of good for just one mobile suit against 10, but right. You know, that was a pretty good fight actually.
Did you guys watch the English version?
I've watched
I got the subtitle
version. Okay. I've seen both.
I was watching the dub.
Okay, if you might have noticed, the guy you just mentioned was voiced by Sean Schimmel, and he sounds exactly like Sean Schimmel, and there's like absolutely no doubt in your mind from the first word that he speaks that that's Goku. I thought that was amusing. It's always funny to hear him in other stuff. But this is, it's a pretty good dub overall. My only criticism is that they use Steve Cannon again as a lead character, and there seems to be some weird stuff when Gundam gets dubbed that they like to use him or freaking Brad Swale as the main characters like over half the time, and that's pretty unusual, don't you think? I mean, because these characters are not related, but a lot of them are in the same timeline too, so it's odd to have them sound like when there's no real connection between them. But whatever. The, other than that, it's great. All the voices are really good, and I think it's a really good dub. And you know, interesting that they have to make this in like, I don't know. It's like a, you know, because it comes out with the Japanese release too. So I don't know what the production schedule on that is like, but it's probably pretty stressful.
Well, they
get that done at the same time as the actual show itself.
They have like 4 months. I'm sure the Japanese version is like made like earlier, and then they have it translated into English. You know, I mean, they have a long time per episode.
I don't know. I'm just based on how fast dubs normally get done. I think that it's a pretty remarkable effort that they're able to do that pretty much instantly, it seems.
But, I mean, pretty much to finish it up, there's a really cool colony battle, you know, inside. And there's also some really good gruesome deaths, too. Mm-hmm. How do people die? Like, you know, apparently the teacher that all the kids didn't like, he's the one in the blast doors or whatever. And you got the guy that's like in his apartment just like I guess cleaning his carpet or something, and it's like that beam comes in there and just like obliterates him.
Yeah,
it's like, dang, dude.
Yeah, those are all like well, aside from the teacher, those are pretty much all just background characters, but it does start to become more Tamino like later on. I'll say that, but that named characters start dying with great
Then he got like, you know what, 90% of the class that gets like, that's all in front of the blast door, and then like they're not there anymore. Once the mobile suit breaks in there, and then the purple hair girl, she's all, "Where's my classmates? Where's Tom? Where's
Where did they go?"
No.
Those none of the other classmates were even named though, were they? Like no, before she started yelling.
The one, the only ones that survived are the ones that we had already.
Yeah.
Scene, the ones that already had a dialogue more than, you know, one or two lines. But another thing I thought it was like kind of interesting was like when Bernard was like going to find Audrey. Mm-hmm. And the mansion and everything. And then while they're there, the captain that's part of the transport ship is there too, because that's part of their whole deal right there. Mm-hmm. And there was some other like story with that, and I kind of halfway paid attention to what was going on before that actual, like, before the special unit, the forces units came in there. Mm-hmm. But, apparently, like, the captain guy sees him, and then he shoots all his bullets out of his gun, and then just tosses it, and starts carrying on a conversation with this guy. And I didn't know, if Bernard was going to take the gun and hold on to it or whatever as, like, a keepsake. That's what I thought in my first time.
Yeah.
That would have been kind of cool. And then he came back to the captain, and he's just like, "Hey, you drop this. Bam, bam, bam," or something like that. Like totally dirty, go Dirty Harry on him.
That would have,
I didn't
been
write
awesome.
This script, so, yeah.
That would have been pretty sweet. But yeah, there's some really complicated political dealings going on in that scene with between Anaheim and the Viz Foundation and Neo Zeon and Audrey and, oh my god, that sound you may have heard was my cat throwing up. But I'll ignore it and go on.
That's the final faction.
Oh, God. What was I on?
You're
very complicated political dealings between Anaheim, Viz Foundation, Earth Federation, Neo Zeon, and Audrey, who's basically her own party. So hopefully that gets... I mean, it's just barely touched on in episode one, but they'll definitely get more into that, and you'll see. You'll see.
Alright, so yeah, I got Portal 2 for the PS3. I got it before the PS3 network crashed, which it is still out right now at this moment in time, which by then, by the time this podcast comes out, balance will be restored, and maybe Sony will go to court and get sued a lot. Who knows? But
I hope so.
I like my system. Well, we'll find out in due time by the time this podcast comes out. But Portal 2 is really fun. Apparently it takes place years after the first game. And regarding lengthwise, like I know I at least had to play the game for about 8 or 9 hours compared to the first game, which was I could be beaten about 4 or 5. So the game is really naturally about double the length of what the first one was.
8 hours isn't great. I mean,
what?
8 hours is still pretty short.
It's an actual challenge. Like, I didn't have any problems with the puzzles until like the last 3 or 4 in the game. Like, maybe my mind just shut down, saying I'm done. I'm not letting you. You're not going to do any more portal puzzles. And I'm just over there like making portals left and right. I'm like, how does this go here? And my brain's just like sitting up there. It's like, no, I'm done. I'm completely not helping you out with this puzzle whatsoever. So I was stuck on one for 45 minutes, and I was stuck on another one for about the same amount of time, which I actually had to break down and go online and find out how to solve one of the puzzles.
What's the point of a puzzle if you have the internet to it for you?
Because I want to beat the game. And I was that close, and I'm like, no, I'm not going down without a fight kind of thing. So, but the scripting and the dialogue in the game is really good, and apparently like there's a whole other like sub-level, like basement level of the actual complex that you're on. Mm-hmm. That apparently it's part of the whole Aperture Labs, but not to spoil it too much, but you go down to the bottom depths of like, you know, this laboratory that's been there for quite some time, and this is like a lab, you know, with that started back in the 60s of Aperture Science and everything. And so there's this voiceover, the director of the place, like telling you how to do, like, you know, what to do here and here, kind of, or just giving you crap all around. Mm-hmm. And kind of doing these science jokes, like, you know, oh, we have our new hot intern today, but too bad, fella, she's married to science.
Ugh.
Stuff like that. And you're basically hearing all the dialogue while trying to, like, you know, sort through the puzzles and things like that. And then apparently the more you progress upwards towards the level or try to get out of there, it goes through the decades. Like, you'll see years and, like, decade years on the walls and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, like, you'll hear, like, the, you know, the president or the director of Aperture Science or Labs, you know, get kind of darker in tone and everything about how, like, it's the job is pretty much beating him down and things like that. So it's a very fun game. I completely enjoyed it. But, I mean, I want to get more use out of the, you know, the game itself if I can just go online to PSN and do the co-op mode.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's not going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, it's really good. I love Valve games. I love all Valve games, and this is no exception. I'm kind of surprised that they made this instead of Half-Life 3.
Well,
I think that's a series that has been, I don't know, woefully, like, neglected way more so than Portal, which is just kind of a...
Well, they're supposed to be doing, like, what, an episode 3, I think? Or is it just going straight to Half-Life 3?
Well, they've been supposed to be doing that for, like, 5 years, and we don't have a release date, we don't have a single screenshot or any info whatsoever, so I don't even know if they are doing it.
Speaking of neglected games, when is Duke Nukem Forever coming out? Isn't that,
dude,
like...
Dude, June... something. But it comes out in June. It was May 3rd, but they pushed the date. I'm actually probably one of the 5 people on the planet who got the Balls of Steel edition, because I want a collectible bust of Duke Nukem looking down upon me when I watch TV and playing with radioactive, like, you know, colored dice and things like that. I'll pay the extra 64, you know, 40 extra bucks to get everything like that combined. Granted, I don't know how the gameplay is going to be, but I'm going to assume it's going to be an overall decent game, especially if it's coming from Gearbox.
Yeah, Gearbox is a really good developer.
Yeah, they know how to make games.
Like, I think I've played all of their games too.
I played their Brothers in Arms Hell's Highway game. I beat that. And
yeah,
then
that's the best one in that series. Yeah,
that was a fun game. And then I'm trying to go back and play the original Brothers in Arms games, but I got stuck on one level for my Xbox, and I just haven't touched it.
Yeah, those are not quite as good. Still good, not quite as good.
Yeah.
And then there's Borderlands, which is great.
I haven't had a chance to play Borderlands, but I heard a lot of good things about it.
Yeah, it's really fun. And then, of course, they actually... It's funny, because we were just talking about Valve, but Gearbox got their start making the Half-Life 1 expansions. Those were the first games that they ever made. So that's kind of cool. Those two companies are kind of linked in that way. But yeah, Portal 2, very good. Very, very, very good. If you haven't played it yet, go play it. Don't really need to play Portal 1. You'll still probably appreciate it. It's really
cool. I mean, they kind of have a tie-in story, sort of. But
yeah, they do, but it's just one of those things where, well, your character's not even talking anyway. The only character that's still in it is GLaDOS, and obviously, if you've been on the internet at all in the past 5 years, you probably know enough, you know?
That's true, yeah.
If you can find the orange box for cheap, yeah, go get it. I mean, it has Half-Life 2, which is probably the best video game ever made.
I let my brother borrow my orange box copy. Actually, it's actually his friend's copy for the 360 that I've had for the past 3 years that he will never get back.
Oh.
But I'll let my brother borrow my now orange box copy to play for, so he can play the first Portal game. But then I told him, "Let you know, dude, play Half-Life 2 and then Episode 2.
Yeah, definitely get that if you haven't already. But don't let it stop you from checking out Portal 2. Because that, I mean, it's good. It stands alone on its own. It's a very good game.
Yeah, there was a mention of in Portal 2 about Black Mesa, for a brief moment, but...
Yeah, they supposedly take place in the same universe, which is weird, because other than that, there's, like, no connection whatsoever. Because this all takes place in, like, an abandoned research facility. You don't go outside until the very end, then even then you're just kind of out in the field in the fucking middle of nowhere. So
and it's basically, like, you come out of a tin roof, and there's a wheat field, and that's how it ends.
Yeah. So there's really not much of a connection. I don't even know why they made it in the Half-Life universe, to be honest.
I heard something like the main character of Portal being some future Half-Life sequel or something. Supposedly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that, there's like... Isn't that supposed to be...
Because there have been no details about the next Half-Life game at all. That's come out. So we have,
not while, but... Yeah, I mean, there was, like, when the first game, Portal game, came out, there was, like, you know, things about lesbian undertones and things like that, but...
What?
That's something I heard off of Kotaku or something, like, a couple years ago.
Huh.
I don't know, it's just, like, that's stupid. It's, like, there's nothing sexual about Portal at all unless you can try to find something sexual about it.
That is a theory that I have not heard before.
I heard on Kotaku or something, but that was... Yeah, so I think that was something that everyone's like, it's no big deal.
That's funny. I don't know. Insert some joke about dropping companion cubes into incinerations here. There you go. There's your sexual jokes in Portal. What was discussed when I left?
Just Portal.
Okay.
We moved right on to Portal.
Oh, okay.
So Tokyo Pop is gone, and we're gonna memorialize Tokyo Pop here. Talk about what they had, and at the time they died.
So this would be old news by the time it airs. It's already old news now when we're talking about it. We haven't recorded an episode in a few weeks, so a few. Weeks ago, Tokyopop announced that they were stopping making manga altogether, which is interesting because they're still going to exist as a company making, like, movies and stuff.
What? They are?
Yeah, they are. So that's why I put Tokyopop's death/suicide, because it seems like they are just ending their manga division out of, like, convenience, because it's not making them any money anymore.
I read they only had 3 employees.
Even though that's how they started out, was, you know, a manga division, because it started out with, like, the Gundam Blue Destiny manga when they were part of the, what were they before?
Mix is what they were
called. Yeah, Mix, yeah. And then they had, like, the Tokyo Pop Club, which actually became their official name later.
Yeah.
And that's when they're doing the Gundam Wing mangas and stuff like that, yep.
This is a company that owes their entire existence to manga, and for them to stop making manga and then continue on with some other venture is pretty absurd, but nonetheless, that is exactly what happened.
I read that they only have 3 employees or something like that, or that they only had 3 employees, but that might have just been in their manga division.
I don't think that's even possible.
as far as I know, like, to me, Tokyo Pop officially died when the license for Initial D was taken from them. So, you know, America will never get the rest of Initial D. And I still got the last 2 volumes that I haven't really gone through and read yet.
They hadn't released anything in a while, had they? I mean,
what do you mean?
Anime-wise? Manga.
No. Manga-wise, yeah, they release stuff all the time.
Really? I don't know where I got that 3-employee thing, but
I don't know either, because that's not.
I think that was on Anime News Network.
Yeah,
it said something like 3 or 5 employees.
For how long has it been like that? Because it's not even
probably like a month or something.
For a month, it had been like that. Okay,
I don't know.
Since the last layoffs that were done.
So, I feel like that seems hard to believe.
Well,
that a company could function.
I keep Tokyo Pop's memory alive with my Initial D copies of from Tokyo Pop.
Yeah,
I've got all of first stage and second stage.
Some people who've not gotten into anime or manga until just recently may not remember that Tokyo Pop used to be on top of the manga industry, and they used to dominate by brute force, by basically just licensing as much as possible, whether it had a fan base or not. And just hoping, you know, just kind of hoping that if they license 100 titles, one of them will turn out to be really critically successful and gain a fan base. And that worked out for a little while, and then, you know, and then apparently at some point it stopped working out. And
Kodansha, that's it. Yeah, Kodansha had the licensing for Initial D and a few other manga titles that, you know, they stopped giving the licensing or pulled the licensing from Tokyo Pop.
Yeah,
so that was part of it too. That was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, for whatever reason, Kodansha, who's a Japanese publisher, pretty much just pulled the rug right out from under them at some point, and so they're reclaiming a bunch of licenses. And I don't know what the deal behind that is, because it's kind of what happened to ADV too. But the difference is that ADV is still alive, man.
They got merged or migrated as an embryo to like some other anime company.
Right. Yeah. Well, but because of similar reasons, because the Japanese publishers and companies basically just decided to take everything back and not do business with them. So it's pretty weird. There's some weird behind the scenes stuff that we'll probably never get to know about regarding this Tokyo Pop thing. But it's too bad. I remember a few weeks ago we were talking about DVDs and how I said some of my favorite DVDs are the ones that are in the worst shape, because I've taken them so many places and they've gotten used so many times. I would say the manga equivalent of that for me is the original 3 Cowboy Bebop volumes that Tokyo Pop put out back in the
Yeah, I've got the 3rd one, and then I think they did the Cowboy Bebop anime guides, and I've got most of those.
Yeah, there were a couple of series that they ended up being in, but the first one is one that I had, and those are in terrible shape, but they're on my shelf, and I've gotten much enjoyment of those. So that's the thing that I'll remember talking about. Those. And they also put out an awful lot of Gundam manga, which apparently...
Oh, yeah.
Now, it's too bad, because apparently they started to do Ecole du Ciel again after that having been on hiatus for a long time, and then...
Well, I like to finish up that series as well as get the second manga for Lost War Chronicles.
I would start looking for that now before it becomes possible to find.
Yeah, and then of course I got all my copies of the Gundam Wing Last Outpost, which is AKA Gundam Wing G-Unit.
Yes,
I got that when that first came out. Yeah,
that was actually
not a bad manga.
Yeah, that's a really fun series, and I don't know if a lot of people know about that at all, but that was back when there was like not a whole lot other than Gundam Wing stuff out here, and that came out. Gundam The Last Outpost is what it's called, and it's pretty ridiculous. It's by, I can't remember his name, but he does a ton of Gundam manga, and it's pretty good.
I can try to pull it up real quick if I move the other manga off my shelves.
Oh, it's Koichi something. I can't think of his last name.
Not Koichi Ohada.
No.
Is it better than like the Gundam Wing show, or?
Yeah, I think so. This may be nostalgia speaking, but I think so.
it takes place after the Gundam Wing show. Like, I actually have a couple model kits to G Unit.
Yeah, it's not. It doesn't have the characters from Gundam Wing. It's just in that in that timeline.
Yeah, same universe. It pretty much happens right after the series, and there's like a faction of Oz left that goes out to this like outpost.
So is it like between Gundam Wing and Endless Waltz?
I think so. Yeah. Hmm. I think so. I should read that again. It's been quite a while, but. And then Tokyo Pop also, well, I can't really think of a whole lot other. I mean, they have so much stuff.
What
but
movies?
Those are the two that are the most memorable.
What
movies
do they release?
The Last Outpost and Kelly.
What movies do they release?
Priest is one that's about to come out in the next couple of weeks. I actually saw a commercial for it on TV the other night. But that's a movie that they're putting out in theaters, like a wide release movie based on one of the Korean manga titles that they have.
Are they going to like change their name, or is it still going to be Tokyo Pop?
I don't know.
You think it would be kind of insulting to keep that name and just put out movies?
Well, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what their names can be. We'll see. So, I don't know. R.I.P. Tokyo Pop. You were never my favorite or anything, but they certainly...
Who's left in the manga field?
They were certainly
field?
A giant in that industry.
Who's left in the manga field? Just like Viz and a few others.
Delray, Dark Horse.
Yen Press.
Bandai. What Bandai's usually doing the Gundam 00 mangas.
Yeah, Bandai. And
Dark Horse.
Uh-huh. I think that's it.
Yen Press.
Yes.
That's pretty sad.
So, yeah, there you go. Tokyo Pop dead. It's too bad. Another thing is that they used to have huge, huge presence at cons, even Comic Con, which is not, you know, too Japanese centric, but they would always have a huge booth with tons and tons and tons of manga. And maybe that's part of the reason why they died. I don't know, because Genion kind of used to do the same kind of thing, and we all know what happened to them. So
Jay Turner used to always go there and buy stuff at their sales at Comic Con.
At Tokyo Pop?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, are you sure it wasn't Viz? Because he's more of a Viz guy, I think.
I think he did both. Maybe not.
Well,
maybe. He's a big Viz fan, though.
Yeah.
He still rants to me whenever they release a new Bobobo manga. And I'm like, I don't know, but...
I thought they stopped.
Anyway. No, well, they graduated it, so...
Mm.
From Shonen Jump.
Yeah.
But they still do the mangas. The manga volumes, right?
Do they?
I think so. It's
I don't
like,
think they do.
I think it's like slowed down to like one a year or something.
That's
well,
it's bad enough that they already screwed it up by starting it at volume 7 or whatever, but
yeah,
one a year. Ugh.
Yeah, that's a franchise that's just not going to work out here.
Well, no matter how well they treat it, that's going to be the case. See? It's just not very accessible for Western audiences, I don't think.
No, not at all.
Except for like Jay Turner.
Yeah.
Well, we could also talk about the volume 12 of Evangelion's manga, which you got recently, right?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, let's talk about that. There's some serious badassery in this from one Gendo Ikari, and I'm not going to spoil it for you. But you should definitely read this. It will make you like his character a lot more. He says some awesome things in this one, as well as does some awesome things. If you read volume 11, you would know that instead of where in the anime series how he grafts the embryo of Adam onto his hand, in volume 11 he just eats it. He just opens up his mouth and drops it in his mouth. And then it fuses with his body, and then interesting things start happening. I'm not going to spoil it, but let's just say he becomes a super badass, and he also reveals his motivation to Shinji. I think a couple of weeks ago we were talking about whatever his plan for instrumentality is and how mysterious that is, and I was saying how they never explain that stuff. Well, he explains it in this volume, so you get that, and pretty great. And they're going; it's still going through End of Evangelion. It goes up to the end of episode 25, and then who knows what the hell is going to happen after that, or when we're ever going to get to see it or read it, rather.
Supposedly, but, this month they started publishing it again in Japan, but I don't think anyone's translated it or anything. But no. It may not even have been published this month. Who knows?
You mean
the manga? Like, it was on hiatus for quite a while.
Right. Yeah, he does that. So yeah, go buy that. But obviously, you have to enjoying this manga is difficult, just knowing that it'll be so long when the next one comes out.
Yeah.
But
you kind of forget what happened in the previous one in the previous years.
It's still very, 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 very enjoyable. And there's enough differences between this and the TV series that you don't feel like you're just reading the same thing over again. And probably the best example of that is in this volume of Gendo explaining his motivations to Shinji. So, yeah, there you go.
We have some viewer mail here that we're going to read. We're almost done with this episode, but we're going to read some viewer mail first. Dear Cool Kids Club, I don't think I'm going to read this one. Dear Cool Kids Club, thank you for making such a great podcast. Our ratings are through the roof. Keep up the good work, since I can't host Toon Radio without you. Love, Mason. Oh, thank you, Mason.
Shucks. You're welcome, Mason.
Dear Cool Kids Club, Samantha is
being disrespectful. Wait. Are we going to get Dafton to read these?
I don't know.
Is he still going to give a shit enough?
He's watching Glee.
I thought his mic didn't work.
No, he was talking in here. Dear Cool Kids Club, why is the government out to get me? From JCoon76.
I don't know what to say, JCoon. Hang in there. I'm sure you'll get through this eventually.
Dude, live off the grid. That's the only way.
Yeah.
Daft, we're reading viewer mail. You want to read it?
Sure. Dear Cool Kids Club, what channel is Hiatus on, and how can I get it? This is from 4Kids Forever.
You can scroll up. There's some more in here.
I don't understand the question. I don't understand the question. Sorry.
The individual is asking what channel Hiatus is on. Now, yeah. I mean, I might be off base here, but Hiatus is a TV term for when the show isn't airing new episodes. I don't know if that's what this person was referring to, or if it was an actual show called Hiatus.
Good question. I don't care. Let's move on.
Okay, next one.
Read the first one.
Alright.
By Emily?
Dear Cool Kids Club, yeah. I think some of you need to get laid, especially Mr. Dafty. is that referring to me?
No, that's someone else.
Alright. I'll gladly buy some prostitutes for you guys if you would accept them. Love, Emily.
Wow. I don't know what to say about that.
We already read the Mason one, so skip it.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure what to say to this one either.
I think someone needs to stop acting so high and mighty. How about that? Someone needs to stop looking down on other people.
Someone is an asshole and vulture.
Yeah, just all right.
Dear Cool Kids Club, I have been bullied by a man named Uncle Jeb on a respectful Mucha Rita fan board. I have tried contacting the Better Bullying Bureau, but I have been having difficulty. This is from Rassler. RASSLOR.
What's the Better Bullying address?
BetterBullyingBureau.webs.com, and you can post a testimonial on the testimonial tab of the site, and they'll try to help you with your problems. And
Rassler, I would definitely... You need to tell us how you're having difficulty. The BBB has helped many people with their problems. I mean, Shin Bombeku here has actually been revived by them.
Mm-hmm.
He was at one point dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they brought me back from the dead. I've been resurrected thanks to their efforts.
So I don't really understand. So I don't know how they could be having issues. And we will let them know since they sponsor our program. I guess, do you guys have any advice before, like, in addition to what the BBB might say?
Nope. Let's move on to the ish. We can't compare to their advice. They're just too good for us.
No, that is a very good point. We should let the professionals handle it.
Let's move on to the Ishtar letter.
Dear Cool Kids Club, Samantha is being disrespectful to me. She won't answer my messages and won't make a reasonable date for us to talk again. Her phone is up her ass too tight. How do I straighten this from Ishtar? If you try to straighten it, I'm pretty sure you'll be sent to some federal facility.
Yeah, don't make no attempt to straighten this, Ishtar. Yeah. Dionic, do you have any girlfriend advice for Ishtar? Other than, like, don't get it on her face.
I'm way getting on my way to drunkenness, so I can't answer right now.
All
right. If I had some advice for Ishtar, I would suggest kill yourself.
That's an example of what not to say.
That's bullying.
The better bullying group is not
approved. It's not bullying. That's not bullying.
We did peer pressure last week.
We did do peer pressure last week?
Yeah.
I thought last week was the Evangelion thing.
Shut the hell up. It was a joke. Do another one.
We're out.
Is that all of them?
Yeah.
Fuck.
That's a lack of fan mail here.
How long has this episode been going?
I guess it's time to talk about Gundam Unicron.
Here. Oh, wasn't that funny? Calm down.
It was pretty funny.
I'm on my way to getting buzzed, so, you know, don't listen to me.
Alright.
This episode's been going an hour and 2 minutes.
Alright, well.
Does the Cool Kids Club podcast have an official beer?
They should. I should promote that.
Yeah, Nick, what are you drinking?
Some kind of...
I'll tell you what. I'm going to promote Shock Top Raspberry Wheat, which is what I have. It's got a guy with some sunglasses with an orange face and like a mohawk made out of wheat. And it says Shock Top. I'm dead serious. This is what my beer bottle looks like. And it's pretty good.
I can't endorse this at the time, but we'll go with that for now. How about that?
So we'll need to work on getting official sponsorship from them. And by that, I mean we need to try and get 3 cases of beer.
We're back, and we're going to give closing remarks now.
I don't want to say anything anymore, ever.
Okay, Adapt.
9/11 was an inside job.
Oh, okay. Zionic.
I would die for you.
Vimon Josh.
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me. No more.
I can't see it.
You can't see me right now, but I'm doing the head thing.
Okay, we'll stop.
I'm so tired of cleaning up cat vomit. I can't even tell you how upset I am right now.
I'm so drunk. I mean, I'm so tired of being drunk, of drinking this beer.
I wish we had better alcohol than we have so that I could be drunk. I'm so frustrated right now. I can't get no satisfaction. Are you still recording?
Yeah.
You should probably end it.
That was pretty good.
I guess.
Okay. Goodbye, listeners.
Bye.
Stay tuned for Geek Nights.
See you next week.
We're gone.
I cannot concentrate.
Should we move on to the other topics? Or do we have anything more to say about this?
Can we pause recording? Pause.
Yeah, I guess so. Hold on.
Well, right. we can just edit this out or something. So
yeah, that's cool.
We can
just keep it going.
Okay.
Well, I have to get up. I have to get up and clean up some cat puke.
Okay, Zionic, you can talk about Portal 2 while he's gone.
You idiot.